This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Listen to former Illinois Governor George Ryan recount how everyone on his staff opposed his commutation of death row inmate sentences.
You know, it was just one of those things that it seemed to be the right thing to do to me. You know, we've had enough of this, and we're crashing too many times, so we got to close down the system and find out what's wrong with it and get it fixed, and still have it.
Ryan has written a memoir of his fight against the death penalty. Plus, both major Bloomington Normal school districts will begin hybrid learning late next month. Hear from Superintendents Kristen Weichel and Barry Riley about the two-day-a-week in-school model. And there is still a bit of in-person entertainment in central Illinois. Learn about the southern rock of Blackberry Smoke. All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from WGLT listeners. Join the community of informed news consumers who listen to WGLT and also support it financially. Learn more about how you can support WGLT's nonprofit public service mission at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. The family of McLean County's youngest COVID victim says her death is a reminder the disease can hit different people in very different ways. 34-year-old Andrea Schwab of Bloomington died Sunday after fighting COVID for several weeks. Her mother, Grace, says Andrea had asthma but no other major health problems.
She said, "This disease is the devil."
Andrea had just finished school at the Midwest Technical Institute in Peoria and planned to work in healthcare. Her mother says she loved helping people.
She had such a lovely smile. She always had a smile. She just didn't deserve this.
22 people in McLean County have died from complications related to COVID. McLean County health officials report two more COVID-related deaths, including that youngest area resident to succumb to the virus. The McLean County Health Department says the second woman was in her 60s. Both had underlying health conditions. There are now 10 COVID patients hospitalized in McLean County. The number of patients in intensive care stayed at 2. The health department reports 9 new confirmed COVID-19 cases. That's the first time in a month the daily caseload was in the single digits. The county's testing positivity rate ticked up slightly to 4.1%. Bloomington Normal's unemployment rate shows signs of recovery during the pandemic. The area, though, is still short more than 6,000 jobs compared to a year ago. The area unemployment rate dropped to 7.2% in August. That is down from nearly 8% in July. It's also the lowest jobless rate of any metro area in Illinois. The Illinois Department of Employment Security shows the Twin Cities area has lost 6,200 jobs since last August. The areas hardest hit are leisure and hospitality, professional and business services, government and educational and health services. The Normal Theater will reopen for in-person film screenings starting October 1st. The Uptown Theater has been closed for about 6 months because of the pandemic. Normal Civic Arts Manager Adam Fox says things will be different. Masks are required at all times. There will be no concessions. And there will be assigned seating using only 50 of the theater's 400 seats.
Know that we're not abandoning any of the things that have made the theater what it is and what you've come to love. We just need to figure out how to do that in this current landscape.
The theater will reopen with the 2020 edition of the Manhattan Short Film Festival. Catholic Archbishop John Myers has died at age 79. Myers served as bishop in Peoria from 1990 to 2001. The Peoria Diocese includes Bloomington Normal. The Pope later appointed Myers to the Archdiocese of Newark, New Jersey, where he served till 2016. He grew up in northern Illinois. Myers will be buried in Peoria. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM, WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Bloomington Normal school districts will soon return to classrooms a couple of days a week. Unit 5 and District 87 have made hybrid learning plans public. The districts are fulfilling a promise to let parents know about second quarter plans before October 1st. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel says what might be rapidly changing coronavirus infection data will not cause fast adjustments to district-wide in-person learning.
It's not realistic. It's not good practice for our students, families, or staff. So before we move from one stage to another, the district's going to need to be in the previous stage for a minimum of 10 consecutive instructional days.
Weichel says Unit 5 created the plan with frequent communication and input from teacher union leaders. District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley says the districts have benefited from the experience of other districts that opened and then had to close because of COVID-19 outbreaks. He says part-time classroom schedules seem to work.
As I talk to colleagues who have been in session for several weeks, that's where they've had the success. They've done hybrid models where they limit the number of students in classrooms such that you can space them apart.
Riley says most District 87 parents say the remote learning experience is good, but not everyone.
Some of our families have had extreme difficulty with that. If you think about families where you might have multiple kids who are working in a living space all together in multiple grade levels doing different things, that's pretty difficult.
Riley says the district does not have a return plan yet for grades 6 through 12. Grades 3 through 5 will return in early November for Bloomington schools. All Unit 5 students will be in a hybrid format by October 26. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel says if the coronavirus hits a particular classroom hard, there may be pauses for cleaning.
I really want to stress, parents and guardians, you have to have a backup plan.
Weichel cautions exposures mean students can't come to class at all.
I know you may not like it, you may not agree with it, but please don't argue with us because we won't budge on that. If your child's been identified as a close contact, they have to quarantine for 14 days.
Parents in both districts can still choose all remote learning. District 87 Superintendent Barry Riley says even if no one chose to stay remote, District 87 could handle the numbers safely. At the start of this school year, Riley said the coronavirus would have to be nearly gone to move back to in-person learning. The numbers are down. Positivity rates have fallen as well. Hospitalizations are up. Riley tells Eric Stock, even with the virus present, it's okay.
What I said back then was really when we were in an environment where we could not meet all of the safety recommendations. And you fast forward to today, and we are in a much better place and have been able to now basically guarantee that we can meet those safety recommendations. We can do the social distancing along with the mask and also along with all of the cleaning and disinfecting that you would have to do to make sure that you keep kids safe. So in other words, if a case does develop, the concern back when we had everybody together was you would likely have to self-quarantine a much larger number of individuals, classrooms, entire schools than the plan we have today, which if you have symptoms, somebody with symptoms, or someone who actually tests positive, by implementing these safety factors, that self-quarantine should be limited to that one specific individual.
Was that an option the district had considered at the beginning of the year, essentially alternating to where you would only have half the students there at a given time?
It was an option that we looked at, but given the cards that were on the table at that time, we just didn't feel like we had enough opportunity to plan for that and prepare for it, get our staff ready.
Now, what about hallways between periods, and what about school buses where they're going to be in closer quarters with other students, possibly for a more extended period of time, at least more than the 15 minutes that they prescribe for true social distancing?
Well, let's start with the hallways. And remember, we're only starting with our pre-K through 2. And they're in cohorts. There will not be movements in hallways where multiple groups of kids are coming together. And so it's much easier to do that at the pre-K through fifth grade level. Ultimately, we will have third through fifth back a couple of weeks after our October 26th date for the pre-K through 2. But that's where the challenge becomes greater when you get to the middle school and especially the high school. And that's part of why we are not prepared to have those students return at this time, although we are working on that, and we hope to have plans that will afford us the opportunity to have students come back. But specifically for the hallways at those levels, that's where we have to plan some logistics to minimize that risk. So it's much greater at the secondary level than it is at the elementary level.
That's District 87 Superintendent Mary Riley with Eric Stock. Riley says viral transmission on buses is not a big concern now, since buses will be less than half full every day. He says some will use their own transportation to make the number on buses even smaller. Riley says surveys show parents generally had good experiences with remote learning, but it was harder for many parents of younger grade school children to manage. Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel says the union and the district consulted frequently to develop their plan. What was missing is Illinois State Board of Education and Regional Office of Education input.
With this particular process, we didn't rely on them. The State Board of Education, has put out different guidance documents over the course of the last several months, and, we've referred to those at times.
Some districts express frustration that the guidance is not consistent or clear. What has your experience been?
Sure. I would agree with that sometimes it's not always as clear as what we would hope from the State Board of Education. I personally would have liked to have seen the State Board come out with metrics that they wanted all school districts across the state to use, but to date they have not done that.
Is that a reasonable ask of them because of the variety of district types? So you are the 15th largest district, and that's a lot different from a tiny rural district.
I guess what I would be looking for would be, what are the metrics that districts should use to make those decisions, and what are the ranges within? Like, what are the numbers, the percentages that districts should use? Because that's not clear cut. So while still, they could give that, I think, to districts while still allowing individual districts decision-making authority. But right now, they've not given any guidance on that. And so it makes it really challenging for, school districts across the state.
Have they said why not?
I have not heard a reason, no.
It's difficult, if not impossible, in the present moment to satisfy everyone. Who do you choose to not satisfy?
I would say it's more about a choice of what can we do to meet students' academic and social-emotional needs while keeping students and staff safe. And so that's what we feel like our plan addresses.
Those might be conflicting priorities just in and of themselves, let alone all of the other pressures that you're facing.
I guess I don't see it that way. I think because we are doing a hybrid model, so only part of the students will be in person, allows us to follow, the social distancing, abide by all of the safety and healthy guidelines that, different entities have issued. I feel probably more confident that we can do that in a hybrid model, whereas maybe some other school districts have everybody back in person and not being able to meet that social distancing, guideline.
You will have cases. You will have temporary classroom shutdowns for cleaning. But overall, in an overarching sense, what will constitute success for this hybrid plan?
Sure. I think giving our students the opportunity for that in-person instruction to meet their academic and social-emotional needs. Many of the districts that have opened, when they've had positive cases, those positive cases haven't grown in the school setting. They've come in from an outside activity, an adult or that a student has participated in outside of school, maybe a family gathering on a weekend, and then, brought that in. So it didn't really stem from school. So I think, just getting our kids back and being able to keep, the social distancing, meeting all the guidelines, we'll be happy with that.
When will parents have to tell you what they choose? What's their deadline?
Sure. So parents will need to make a decision by Monday, September 28th.
District 87 has cited the difficulty in keeping social distancing during passing periods for high school students as a reason why they don't yet have a way forward for the upper grade levels. You've chosen to go ahead with upper grade levels. How are you handling the challenge of passing periods?
Sure. So we have signage on the floors, on the walls. In some of our larger buildings, stairwells will be one-directional, so you can only go up or down certain sets of stairs. In the hallways that we're able to make one way, we will do our best to do that. But the reality is, students aren't going to be hanging out in the hallway for 15 minutes or longer in between passing periods. Our passing periods are only a few minutes in length. And so, students are all going to have to be wearing masks. The adults in the building will be enforcing that. And if students have to, like, cross paths in the hallway, they're wearing masks. It'll be less than 15 minutes. So we feel comfortable having, again, approximately half of our students in the building on given days.
That's Unit 5 Superintendent Kristen Weichel. This is 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The authors of a memoir about the death penalty in Illinois say it has relevance for the entire legal system. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maurice Posley wrote, "Until I could be sure how I stopped the death penalty in Illinois," about Ryan's moratorium on executions and then the commutation of sentences for everyone then on death row. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan tells correspondent Edith Brady Lunny he'd always supported the death penalty but started to doubt after watching coverage of Anthony Porter released after student journalists acquired a confession from a different man in the killing for which Porter was convicted. Ryan says he likens capital punishment in the state to flying an airplane that crashes 3 times a week. He asks, would you let the plane continue to fly?
No, we've had enough of this, and we're crashing too many times, so we got to close down the system and find out what's wrong with it and get it fixed and still have it.
Ryan says at the time the moratorium and commutation weren't popular.
Well, it was not very pleasant, frankly. I didn't have anybody on my staff that was that stood with me. Everybody there was, I had to work against. From my chief of staff to right down to everybody in the staff, They admonished me for doing what I was doing.
He says the exception was Matt Bettenhausen, an aide for death penalty issues. Ryan says another reason he commuted death sentences was the legislature didn't do much with 85 recommendations from a reform commission. He didn't think that made the system proof against wrongful convictions.
And, of course, it was an election year, and the only thing that passed the General Assembly after all the work that commission put in was a tape recording of confessions. I didn't want to leave office and be at home watching the news to find out that some poor innocent guy that I ignored was executed and he was an innocent man or woman.
Since then, the public has come to view Ryan's decisions on capital punishment more favorably. Ryan's co-author, Maurice Posley, says until Ryan's action death penalty opponents focused on the moral question, whether it's right to kill people to deter crime. Since then, he says, it's whether the system makes mistakes.
The innocence debate that was really fueled by what the governor did propelled the abolition movement.
The National Registry of Exonerations has recorded more than 2,600 wrongful convictions in the U.S. since 1989. More than 300 of them are in Illinois, second only to Texas. Posley says Ryan's story remains important because many of the problems that exist in capital cases are also present in the rest of the legal system and the 3,000 counties in the U.S., each with separate prosecutors.
And there are their own little fiefdom. And within those counties are multiple law enforcement agencies, and getting change to come in a uniform way is virtually impossible. What you hope is that over the passage of time that you get more and more people saying, well, this is what we have to do, this is the right thing to do.
George Ryan later served prison time for unrelated corruption. He says he would make the same choices on the death penalty again.
You know, it was just one of those things that it seemed to be the right thing to do to me.
The book is Until I Could Be Sure, How I Stopped the Death Penalty in Illinois. Ryan co-wrote it with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maurice Posley. This story was produced from an interview done by reporter Edith Brady Lunny. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Musicians and concert promoters are working their way back into larger live music events. That includes the Twin Cities. Blackberry Smoke headlines one of two shows this weekend at the Corn Crib in Normal. Bandleader Charlie Starr tells John Norton his Georgia-based Southern rock band returned to the road last week, playing outdoor shows in drive-in theater settings where audience members themselves are socially distanced.
basically we were on top of a mountain on a stage, and everybody was down at the bottom of the mountain. So it was like this huge expanse between the stage and the audience, and there were big screens, you know, drive-in screens with the video playing. But it was great. It was great to play music for people.
What you're describing reminds me of something I saw back in the late 1980s when Jason and the Scorchers played here in Bloomington Normal. And it was outdoors, and there was this little kind of creek in between the band and the people wanting to watch, and they really struggled not having fans up at the stage. That's the same dynamic, right? You want those people up at the stage. How do you deal with that?
At this point, don't have much of a choice. So I was really experiencing so much joy and just a release, just being on stage with my buddies playing. Just a fantastic feeling. It was immediate.
Our guest is Charlie Starr from the band Blackberry Smoke. You're listening to music from the brand new EP. It's called Live from Capricorn Sound Studios. I got to run to keep from high. It's just sort of an homage to this legendary studio down in Macon, Georgia, and an homage to the actual town itself. You covered 6 new versions of old songs, songs with ties, I'm guessing, to the studio and to Macon, Georgia, where the studio is located.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was that related to the pandemic itself and that you didn't have much to do, so you just went in and cranked out 6 of your favorite songs, or was there more to it than that?
Well, it started a little more simply than that, even. We're trying to think of ways to promote our summer tour that didn't happen thanks to COVID, but it was called the Spirit of the South Tour. And we were going out with a few bands and friends of ours, and J-Mo from the Allman Brothers, an original member, J-Mo, drummer, you know, he was going to come too. And it was like a traveling festival. We'd all play a show, and then the last show of the day or the night would be all of us playing Southern music from the Allman Brothers and Skinner and Marshall Tucker and even, you know, Otis Redding and Little Richard and whatever felt right at the time, really. It would all happen really spontaneously. A friend of ours said, hey, you know, Capricorn is open again, the studio. They want you to come down and record a song or two. And we thought, oh, this is perfect. We'll go down and film ourselves playing some of these songs we love that are Capricorn songs, some of them.
Mm.
And so it was a promotional tool, video. But it sounded great. I mean, it was all done in one afternoon. It's all live, no overdubs. Jimmy Hall from Wet Willie came and sang a couple songs with us and played harmonica. Marcus Henderson from the Marshall Tucker Band came and played flute on Take the Highway. And so anyway, it was all really spontaneous. Take the highway. Lord knows I'm dancing on. Not a right as we finished, there were some people in our camp that were like, this is cool. There might be people who want to own this. And it was like, well, I mean, you know, we're not a cover band. We're
right.
We have, you know, 7 records of our own. But it was like, okay, well, maybe there are. You know, this is fun. The music is fun. It's enjoyable.
You mentioned Jimmy Hall with Wet Willie, and you covered Keep On Smiling on this record as well.
Yeah, we did that.
God, it was one of my favorites from growing up, man. I loved Keep On Smiling so much when it came on the radio. I just thought it was cool.
It's a perfect song. Perfect song. Are you a star?
Charlie Starr from Blackberry Smoke is our guest. Well, obviously, the pandemic has forced everybody to stay home for a long period of time, and it's forced people to rethink maybe even what they do, especially, say, cubicle-based businesses, right, are wondering, gosh, do we need all this office space anymore? Bands, live music, that you know, you really can't rethink that a whole lot, right?
It's forced us to, unfortunately. Like everyone else, you turn to live streams and alternative forms of delivering your music to people.
Similarly to rethinking how you're doing things, did your mind kind of get creative and it opened up? Because normally you're on tour, you're traveling, you're doing all this stuff. Did your mind work creatively in a different way that was unexpected?
not a different way. It just worked a lot. And I wrote a bunch of songs, and we went and made a new album. It'll probably see the light of day early next year. Hopefully we can tour it, because that's the way we promote it.
Charlie Starr from Blackberry Smoke speaking with WGLT's John Norton. Blackberry Smoke plays the Corn Crib in Normal Saturday night, Wild Feathers and Bloomington's Backyard Tire Fire open. Concert COVID guidance and information on ticket grids you can find at WGLT.org. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We'd like to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Comment on our Facebook page, we're WGLT-FM, or follow us on Twitter. We're all at WGLT News. This is WGLT, Bloomington Normal's public media.